From Community Radio, KKRN in Round Mountain, California, this is Community Works Radio. I'm Ellen Sugg. Community Works Radio is a locally produced show that focuses on people who work for the common good in their communities. Welcome to the second day of our three-day KKRN election series with in-depth interviews with one candidate each day for next week's California primary election. I would like to inform all of you that the FCC has very clear regulations about media interviews of candidates. KKRN is not allowed to endorse or promote or support any candidates for public office. Today, my guest is Audrey Denny, candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives, Congressional District 1. I visited with Audrey at her Chico headquarters a few days ago and recorded the following interview with Audrey Denny.
Welcome, Audrey.
Thank you so much, Ellen. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Great. I've been looking forward to this as we made plans over the weeks. So what we'd like you to start with is telling us about yourself and your history here in Congressional District 1.
You bet. So I grew up on a family farm on the central coast of California. We raised beef cows and we had draft horses and we had wine grapes. And then about 15 years ago, I moved up to Chico. And I came up here to go to school initially, and as many people do, I moved to Chico and I immediately fell in love with the community and with the North State and the people who live here. I studied agricultural education at the university, and then after I earned my bachelor's degree, I actually moved to El Salvador, and I spent a year living and working in rural eastern El Salvador with a human rights organization. When I returned back to Chico after that year, I got hired on at the university, and while I earned my Master's of Science degree, I taught agriculture at the university, and I was there for 6 years, and that was a really special time in my life. I love working with students and helping them see and experience the world in new and different ways. For the past 4 years, I've been working still in agricultural education, but in the nonprofit and the private sector. So I spent a year living and working in West Africa and Ghana with a nonprofit. And then for the past 3 years, I've been working in the private sector in agriculture education. So the company that I work for, we say our purpose is to build others' capacity to do good in the world. So we partner with, it's an amazing purpose,
it feels
great. So we partner with other organizations and build their capacity through learning and development solutions. And I'm still actively involved in with the human rights organization that I volunteered for all those years ago in Central America. I stepped down as the president of the board. Turns out it was too much work to run for Congress and be the president of the board at the same time, but we work closely with the governments in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras to help them build up their systems and their structures to protect victims of forced displacement by violence. And so we're the leading human rights organization in the Northern Triangle of Central America. And I'm very, very proud to be spend my volunteer time working with that organization. But
that's so interesting and great that you spent time overseas.
Yeah.
I think it's an important thing for people to do to know what life's like somewhere else.
Yeah. So you asked me who, kind of a little bit about who my bio and who I was, and that's a little bit about my bio, but I want to make sure your listeners get a good sense of me as a human and what I believe I bring, would bring to this high office. And
yes.
Really, the core of who I am as a human being is a central driving belief that every person is inherently equal in rights and worth and dignity, and so that's my core belief. That everything about this race and this run and my motivation and my platform is all built around. So,
well, that sounds excellent. So, how did you come to decide to run for Congress, and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I love my life. I live in downtown Chico. I've been here 15 years. I have this amazing job that I love. I feel like my purpose is being fulfilled through my volunteer work. I really feel like I get to contribute. And so honestly, I'm a little surprised to find myself sitting in front of you as your candidate for the House, because being a politician was never even in my mind. But the driving force, my driving motivation in life is to act and to move the world towards creating more just communities and a more just society. When I think about justice, I see that as the acting out or the living into the belief, that core belief that I just shared with you, that we're all inherently equal. And so for me, this congressional race is about working for justice in the North State. And last Thanksgiving Day was actually the first day that I had ever thought about running for public office. And
wow.
I was driving with my sister really recently. I've got two older sisters. They're the two most amazing women that I know. And I was driving with one of them. We were in the car and we passed a sign to Roseville. And she said, "Oh my gosh, Audrey, I just read this article about these three women our age that are running for office for the first time from Roseville. And my word, isn't that inspiring?" And I said, "Phew, Robin, that is inspiring." And then I had a feeling in my gut, a feeling in my stomach, like none I've ever had before. And it was that feeling of, you know, if not me, then who? And if not now, then when? And that was the first time that I had really thought seriously or at all about stepping into this realm. And then I kind of toyed with the idea for a few weeks. And in early December, mid-December, when it became evident that the tax bill was going to pass, and in the dead of night, we were going to rewrite our tax code in favor of the wealthiest among us and in favor of corporations at the expense of poor and middle-class and working-class Americans, I got fired up and I got angry. And I saw that our incumbent was one of the 11 key California votes that made that happen. And I said, someone needs to hold him accountable for this vote and for voting against the best interests of his constituents. And someone needs to do that this year. And that person's going to be me. And so that's when I decided we officially filed with the FEC on January 2nd of this year, and we haven't looked back.
Well, so it's very good. And what do you think your qualifications are?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this lately because it's an audacious goal. I am a 34-year-old woman, and I have set this audacious goal of representing the North State, representing our 11 counties in the hallowed halls of the House of Representatives. But when I think about it, the House of Representatives is the people's house. And I believe that the most important thing that we have in a representative is that it is a person who truly cares about the people that live in our district and every single person, not just their certain constituency. And someone that will advocate for them and listen to them. And so as your representative, I will represent every person that lives in this district. And when I say that, people always say, "But Audrey, how can you possibly represent every person? There's so many divergent views and differences." And I say, what I think, how I think that plays out is I commit to listening to and attempting to understand the perspective and the framework that every person brings. And by doing that, and then deciding upon a solution that does the most good for the most people, I believe that is how you can be a true representative. And so I will continue to show up and authentically listen to and learn from the people in our district.
Okay. I have a few questions kind of about politics that I'm going to go to, and then we'll hit your priorities and some of the issues. Mm-hmm. How will you approach gridlock in Congress? I mean, going there, it's a national arena.
Yes.
It's far away from California, and that's going to be your life if elected. So what's your idea about the gridlock that's going on there now and how you would relate to it?
So the gridlock in Congress is another one of my motivating factors to run, because right now we don't have a functioning government. We don't have a functioning House of Representatives because we are so far backed into our political corners and these hyper-partisan corners that there is no compromise. There's no governing anymore. It's either you or me. It's us versus us, them versus us, in every single instance. And so I think that there are several things that we can do as leaders, but also as just members of society to attack this gridlock. The first thing that we need to do is we need to elect a new generation of leaders. We need to get entrenched incumbents on both sides of the aisle out of the House of Representatives and elect leaders who are only beholden to the people who live in their district and who want to make positive and productive compromise. That's the first thing. The second thing we need to do is we need to get money out of politics. Because as long as our representatives are bought and paid for by lobbyists, by corporations, and by special interest groups, they're going to stay retreated in their partisan quarters, and gridlock won't move. But the third and I think most important thing we need to do is we need a societal shift. We need, as individuals who live in all of our communities, to be able to talk about politics again with our families and our friends and our neighbors without retreating into our corners. And for me, what that looks like is suspending judgment of the other for long enough to recognize in them their common humanity with me, long enough to say, hey, you might be on a different side of the issue than me, but there's more similar than there is different between us. And so taking the time to find those shared common values that we have in the middle of every single issue, for me, is how we as a society start to heal this brokenness and come back from these ledges so we can, in our own lives, but also in Washington, make productive and reasonable and honest compromises.
Yeah, I've heard a number of people say the first step is listening mm-hmm. to each other without judgment. So, okay, also in particular, I'm wondering, you're running as a Democrat, mm-hmm. And there is a bit of politics going on in the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. and I wondered if you could possibly explain to us how you relate to the Democratic Party mm-hmm. or the internal things that are going mm-hmm. on there. Is there a part, you know, Blue Dog, Berniecrats, whatever?
Yeah, you know? I don't fit a lot of labels very well. It's really hard to put a label on me, which is why I believe I will be a good fit for this district, because we have a diverse district up here. I grew up on a family farm, I mentioned that, and I was a registered Republican for the first 10 years I was registered to vote. And then I moved to El Salvador, I saw a little bit about how the world worked on a broader scale, and that made me reevaluate some of my political leanings, and I've been a Democrat now for 6 years, and it's hard to put a label on me because I'm a pretty unconventional Democrat. But I can tell you that my candidacy is drawing support from across a broad spectrum of the broad space of the political spectrum. We've really activated the progressive Democrat base. We've gotten our Revolution Chico endorsement, we've gotten the Berniecrats of Shasta County endorsement, as well as the National Justice Democrats endorsement. So we're activating that wing of the Democratic mm-hmm. Party. We're also activating no party preference voters in a big way. A lot of the millennial support that we have and the generation coming up behind the millennials, the young people that are just turning 18, a lot of those folks are no party preference voters because they've grown up in a time where they've seen this hyper-partisanship and they are not having it, and they know that that's not an effective way to govern. And so a lot of them are registered NPP, and we're getting support from that segment of the population in a big way. But I'm also reaching into the disenfranchised Republicans who feel like the president and our representative aren't representing them well either. Mm-hmm. And so we're making a lot of inroads with people who traditionally vote conservative. And I'm proud of this coalition because I feel like it demonstrates what I say when I say I will represent every person who lives here. This broad coalition shows that. But also strategically, it gives me a path to victory in November that I don't think any other challenger has.
Okay, and that's a good segue into my next question, which is, what is your response to the Trump administration in general, and how do you think as a congressperson you would be responding to what's going on from him, the president?
Well, I mean, I'll start by saying as a millennial woman who's running for office for the first time, a part of my motivation came from the fact that he was elected president. And I think that I've seen this surge of women around the country running, and that inspiration to me, and that reminder that as women we have voices that need to be heard, has really been an inspiration to me. And I hope that come November of 2018, I'm part of a generation of leaders that is elected in that is more representative of our beautiful nation and of our country as a whole. I think that we need more women. We need more people of color in the halls of Congress. We need more of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters in the halls of Congress. And I'm hoping that I'm part of a movement that will make our House of Representatives significantly more representative.
Hey, thank you, Audrey. If you're just tuning in, I just want to remind you that you're listening to listener-supported KKRN Community Radio, and this is Community Works Radio. I'm Ellen Sugg, and today I'm interviewing Audrey Denny, who is running for Congress in CD1, California Congressional District 1. This is part of a 3-day series of interviews that I'm doing with various local candidates. So now back to Audrey. I think we're then getting to the point where I want to know what your priorities are,
yeah.
And we'll go into the issues discussion a little. So what are your highest priorities?
You bet. So Ellen, I've taken the past 5.5 months since January 2nd to travel around our district. And just to make sure your listeners know, our district is vast. It's the second largest geographic district in California. It covers 11 counties, Siskiyou, Modoc, Lassen, Shasta, Tehama, Butte, Glen, Sierra Nevada, Plumas, Placer, a little bit of Placer. And so it's a big, diverse district. And going into this race, I thought I had some ideas about the most important issues facing our district, but I really wanted to travel around and listen and learn from the people who lived in these communities, from the public servants, from the city councilors and the county supervisors, from the school superintendents and the sheriffs and the healthcare workers, from the farmers and the foresters and the business owners. I wanted to get a better understanding. And so we've been really intentional about traveling around and having one-on-one meetings, but also group sort of mini town hall meetings where we get members of the community to share their concerns. And I've learned a lot. But the one thread that I've seen that runs common through all of our 11 counties is how our stagnant rural economies are harming individuals, but also harming us at a county level and the county's ability to provide for its citizens. And so for me, the number one issue that I look at when I see our 11 beautiful counties is an issue of economic injustice. We are a resource-rich part of the world. We have timber, we have water, we have beautiful agricultural land, yet the people who live in our towns are poor. In our counties, and in my 11 counties, 7 of them are in the 15 poorest in the state in terms of median household income,
mm-hmm.
Right? So we're living in the situation that on an individual level, it makes it hard for people to make it. But on a county or on a societal level, it makes it hard to have robust, healthy communities because we don't have a tax base to reinvest in our communities. And so far and away, I believe that this is the most important issue facing all of our communities.
And how do you approach it then?
Yes, great. It's like I fed you the question.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot that I can do as your representative to help jumpstart, to help boost our rural economic engine, to make sure that people, everyday people, can have an adequate standard of living, but also to make sure that our county officials and our city councilors across party lines have the resources that they need to take care of their citizens. One big area that I want to focus my attention and my energy on is our career technical education, especially at the community college levels. As I've gone around to our different community colleges, time and again I've seen that our community colleges are the economic drivers of our counties. So when I was up visiting with the president of College of the Siskiyous, they were touring me around. They showed me their EMT program, their paramedic program, their fire, their public safety, their pre-nursing program. And they were talking about how the industry can't hire their graduates fast enough. And then I was talking to a woman who's in the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources at Shasta College, and she said, "Audrey, I can't get students through my programs fast enough." She said, "I've got people from industry coming in and saying, hey, if you have anyone who can drive a log skidder, I will pay them so much money right now." And so the making sure that our community colleges are responsive to the industry need that we have right now, and making sure that they're fully funded and fully staffed and fully equipped to to prepare students
so
for good careers.
So you would be proposing federal funds for it? Or
well, the first,
how would that work?
The first thing that we need to do is to reauthorize the Carl Perkins legislation from 2006, and that funds all career and technical education at the secondary and post-secondary level.
That's in the country?
That's the federal legislation, okay. Yeah. So that needs to be reauthorized. But we also
it's not in effect right now?
It's been on a continuing resolution, so it needs to be reauthorized. And so I would be, that's real low-hanging fruit, because career tech education is supported bipartisan, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then I would also be proposing enhancements and to our community college program, and making sure that we're giving them the resources that they need to look at what their limiting factors are for getting mm-hmm. students through their program, and making sure that we truly are being responsive to our industry needs. So that's one area where I believe we can look at to boost our rural economies. I think we also can be looking at
I'm going to break in with another question. Do you know right now how much, or about, I'm not asking you to give me the figure, but about how much support the community colleges that you mentioned are already getting? I mean, are they getting anything right now?
Is Shasta
College getting federal money?
Oh, absolutely.
And state money for career education?
Absolutely.
But the Perkins bill, if it was reauthorized, would be able to bring more into it? Is that
yes.
what you're saying?
Yes, so, yes, yes.
So we're already getting some, but you mm-hmm. say let's get more.
Yeah, I believe if we can subscribe to the notion that our community colleges are the economic drivers of our communities, that is really important to make sure that they're getting increased funding, and making sure that the limiting factors and the barriers that are keeping students from either enrolling in those programs or successfully making it through those programs are diminished.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, while we're talking about schools, mm-hmm. I also really wonder if you have an idea about what to do to help students with the debt crisis that's going on, with the amount of debt that students are going into in order to be at schools. Do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, the student debt crisis. My entire generation is saddled with crippling student debt, and it is far and away one of the biggest economic injustices that we have. I think there's some really low-hanging fruit in terms of student loan forgiveness programs for people who enter public service careers, or for people who enter teaching careers, or even for people who go through medical school.
Some
and
people get
come.
Those, but not very many.
Right.
Right,
so
now.
Expand,
so you could increase the number of people. Is that what you're saying?
Expanding those
students who have debts get jobs that help them forgive their. What they owe.
Right, so expanding those programs and also expanding them, looking around at our North State, we're a medically underserved region as well, so expanding the number of grants that go to people who come back and work in medically underserved regions as doctors and nurses, mm-hmm. so we can be attracting high quality medical professionals, I believe mm-hmm. is also important.
Okay, great. Let's see. Okay, so that's your first priority that we were just discussing.
Yes, and that was
economic injustice, and that led into education. Is there another area that you would say is high on your list of priorities?
You bet. There's other things too. We could talk about economic injustice all day. And there's definitely other things I would want to do to address that besides investing in career and technical education. I believe investing in sustainable forestry practices, fighting for a fair and livable wage across the board, safeguarding and protecting our Social Security and our Medicare to make sure that our seniors can retire in dignity. All of those pieces, I believe, are very, very tied into the economic injustice.
Yes.
Another big, big priority that we see across the board is healthcare. The other day, one of my friends walked into my office right here in downtown Chico, and he was keeled over at the waist. Very, very pale. And he said, Audrey, I think I'm having a heart attack. I have all of this pain right here in my chest. And I said, oh my God, we get in my car. We've got to get to the hospital. And he said, I can't go to the hospital. I don't have health insurance. I can't afford that kind of bill. And the fact that in 2018, in Northern California, in the United States of America, somebody would not go to the hospital when they thought they were having a heart attack, for me is emblematic of the brokenness of our healthcare system. One in four people last year in America didn't seek medical care when they needed it because of a lack of health insurance or because it was going to cost too much, even with their health insurance. And so for me, working towards, on a federal level, working towards a Medicare for All type system or a single payer type system would allow us to decrease healthcare costs overall. It would allow us to focus on prevention and to make sure that every single person, regardless of their socioeconomic status, received the same quality of care. That for me is really important. But healthcare,
so
as you
go
know,
beyond the Affordable Care Act, then
yeah,
it would be. So would it exclude? Would a Medicare for All program in your mind exclude insurance? Just mean that there's a single payer.
Well, so the single payer would be the government, right?
Federal government.
So, but for me, besides those kind of overarching healthcare systems, I mean, I don't need to tell you this from Round Mountain, but there are access problems in our medically underserved region. And actually, I think that your clinic that you have in Round Mountain is an amazing example of how we can provide quality care in our really rural areas. And so investing in federally recognized healthcare
federally qualified healthcare services.
Yes. Get all my acronyms backwards. Investing in those, making sure that we have mental health and behavioral health in the same building, so people can do a warm handoff, making sure that we're allowing nurses to operate at the top of their field, making sure that we're training EMTs and paramedics to be community care coordinators. I think there's a lot that we can do to improve our health outcomes for people who live in the rural areas.
Okay, so, all right. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is KKRN Community Radio. I'm Ellen Sugg on Community Works Radio, and I'm talking with Audrey Denny about her candidacy for the Congressional District 1. And we are going to just take this right now, have a musical break, and come right back with you. Stay tuned for more of Audrey Denny.